Hello, everybody. It's Sam from Financial Samurai. And in this podcast, we're going to talk about short-term and long-term capital gains tax rates by income. And we're going to talk about what the implications are for generating those capital gains. So if you want more incentive to generate passive income in order to give yourselves more freedom to do whatever you want, then look no further than the charts in the post. The short-term capital gains tax rate is equivalent to your federal marginal income tax rate. So once you hold your investments for longer than a year, the long-term capital gains tax rate kicks in and goes way down. So for example, for singles, up to $38,600 is 0% long-term capital gains tax. So as a short-term capital gains tax rate, you're at 10% and 12%. Let's say when you're making up to $200,000, so between $157,501 to $200,000, you're paying a 32% short-term capital gains tax rate and still only a 15% long-term capital gains tax rate. And the maximum long-term capital gains tax rate is 20%, and that starts at $425,801 and over, while the short-term capital gains tax rate at that level is 35%, and then above $500,001, it's 37%. So the largest spread in short-term and long-term capital gains tax is 37% minus 20%, so that's 17%. If you're married, things are a little bit better. So you can earn up to $77,200 in capital gains and pay 0%. Now, if you're at, let's say, $100,000, you're paying 22% short-term capital gains and 15%. And only when you start making over $479,001 are you paying a 20% long-term capital gains tax rate. The short-term capital gains tax rate is 35%, and only after $600,001, you're going to pay a 37% short-term capital gains tax rate, and still, you're only paying a 20% long-term capital gains tax rate. So the largest spread between these two rates is actually when you're making $400,001 to $479,000, the spread is 35% minus 15%, or 20%. So obviously, few couples will generate such large capital gains on a regular basis. However, one scenario that does happen is when long-term owners in high cost of living areas sell their homes. This is what happened to me in 2017. They'll first earn tax-free profits up to $500,000 if they've lived in their primary residence for 2 out of the last 5 years. Check the details in the post that I've linked to. And then whatever profits are left will then face the various long-term capital gains tax rates by income. In another scenario, maybe when a couple cashes in on their long-term stock options. There are plenty of couples who've worked at private startups for years that finally go public or get acquired. You know, a lot of these companies are going public later and later, just kind of like people getting married and having children later and later. So I guess there's a lot of benefits to that. And one thing to note is that, look, although long-term capital gains tax rates are more favorable, they're essentially a double taxation on money that was already taxed, right? You had to pay likely, you know, your short-term capital gains tax rates or a marginal income tax rate to be able to accumulate this amount of money. So therefore, I wouldn't get too excited about paying lower taxes. However, what you should get excited about is not having to pay as high a tax rate while not having to actively work for your income if you generate enough passive income, right? So it's nice you can earn up to $77,200 in total income as a married couple before having to pay any long-term capital gains tax at all. $77,200 is about 20% higher than the median household gross income in America of $60,000, right? So after taxes, $60,000 turns into maybe around $45,000. So for those of you who are willing to stay married and retire in a low-cost area of the country, or who are frugal, $77,200 in tax-free capital gains each year should be sufficient to provide for a comfortable lifestyle, especially if you don't have to work. Just be aware, though, that after you make over $200,000 as a single person and $250,000 as a married person, the government has instituted a 3.8% net investment income tax that applies to whichever is smaller, your net investment income or the amount by which your modified adjusted gross income exceeds the amounts of $200,000 and $250,000. So in other words, let's say you earn $250,000 in W-2 income as a married couple and then earn another $100,000 in investment income, whether it's from a house or a stock sale or dividends or whatever, you'll have to pay an additional $3,800 in net investment income tax on that $100,000 on top of a 15% long-term capital gains tax rate in addition to your state income tax, if any. So given the net investment income tax thresholds, one would argue, and I've argued this before actually, that the ideal income for maximum happiness is around $200,000 for an individual and $250,000 for a couple. So let's talk about how to minimize capital gains tax. Well, the best solution is to just hold forever. Warren Buffett style, really. You just hold and then just live off the dividends. And if you can't hold forever, obviously you should try to hold for at least 1 year. During your decision to hold or sell, it's very important to calculate the tax implication between your short-term and long-term tax rate. Although it's generally better to buy and hold for the long term, when you're younger or in a lower tax bracket, taxes are less of a drag on your returns. As you get wealthier, you become more incentivized to hold, given you're going to be in a higher tax rate. Think about the single person making, let's say, $800,000 a year. If he takes a short-term profit on a $200,000 gain, he'll pay a whopping 37% short-term capital gains tax versus only 20% if he held for at least a year. In other words, the only logical reason for him to sell is if he felt his investment would lose more than 17% or more than $34,000 in value if he didn't sell within a year. So just make sure you're holding onto your investments for the right reasons. In my case, the pain of owning my SF rental property outweighed the cash flow it provided, even though my original plan was to hold the property forever. With a 2.5% cap rate versus now a 3.25% risk-free rate of return on the 10-year bond yield, I'm glad I simplified life, especially since the coastal real estate markets are slowing. Two, use tax-advantaged accounts. You know what these are, right? 401k, IRA, Roth IRA, SEP IRA, Solo 401k, and the 529 College Savings Plan. These plans either allow investments to grow tax-free or tax-deferred. It's a no-brainer. Three, rebalance with dividends, right? Rather than reinvest dividends in the investments that paid them, use the dividends to invest in underperforming or underweighted investments. Typically, you'd rebalance by selling the securities that are doing well and putting the proceeds into those securities that are underperforming. But by using dividends instead of asset sales to invest in underperforming assets, you can avert selling strong performers, one, and thus avoid the capital gains tax that would come from that sale. So obviously, you're going to have to generate a lot of dividends to match capital gains through sales. So you're going to have to be patient. Four, carry losses over, right? When it comes to capital gains on stocks and bonds, you can use investment capital losses to offset the gains. For example, if you sell $20,000 in stock this 1 year and you sold a stock worth $15,000 in losses, you'll be taxed on capital gains of $5,000. So this difference is called your net capital gain. And if your losses exceed your gains, well, you can only carry over the losses by by $3,000 a year. And then finally, look into a robo-advisor. Robo-advisors like Wealthfront, Betterment, who else? Personal Capital is not a robo-advisor, they're a hybrid. They do tax loss harvesting each month or at least every year automatically for you to try to optimize your returns after taxes, right? So to do so would be quite cumbersome if you had to do it manually. So allowing them to do it, that's actually a really, really good benefit that could help your returns, some say, by about 1% a year. So in conclusion, everybody should figure out how to generate at least $38,600 in annual passive income if you're single, or $77,200 in annual passive income if you're married, given the income is all capital gains tax free. At a 4% rate of return, you're going to need about $1 million and $2 million in after-tax capital, respectively. These are the numbers I think everybody should really strive to achieve 1 million for individuals and 2 million for couples. I think it's really possible in your lifetime if you save aggressively and if you invest wisely. If you supplement your capital gains with, you know, side income and all that, you should be good. And obviously, if you're raising a family in a higher cost of living area, like I've discussed, then you're probably going to want to accumulate around $5 million or more in after-tax investments so you can comfortably generate about $200,000 a year in passive income, in gross passive income. One of the key expenses I did overestimate in my original $200,000 budget chart was the 25% total effective tax rate. So it turns out, right, if you look at the charts and if you listen to this podcast, it turns out that their total effective tax rate of $200,000 is closer to only 17% instead of 25%, which buys the couple $16,000 more in income. And the beauty of long-term capital gains tax rate is that even if you end up generating more income, you'll still get the first $38,600 or $77,200 in gains tax-free, depending if you're single or married. Therefore, to the extent that you can generate more, you might as well keep on going until you find your optimal level for financial freedom. Nobody can tell you exactly what it is, and if you have the energy and the capability and the creativity to do so, and you're enjoying it, you might as well just continue. For myself, I just like to do this podcast. I like to write. I think I've been writing a little too much actually this year in 2018. I should probably dial it down a little bit and balance my lifestyle a little bit more. But that said, it just keeps me active. And this podcast sometimes generates some revenue, and the blog obviously generates some revenue. So I'll just keep on going until I run out of ideas and things to talk about. I hope everybody enjoyed this episode. Until next time, folks, keep saving and keep investing.